Hello, welcome to the Quantitative Leap webinar series. This is the first in a series that are named after a policy brief that I released in March. My name is Pamela Bergman, and I'm your host today. We are talking about how math policy can improve transitions between high school and college. My recent policy brief, together with my prior sets of reports on math readiness, have documented growing interest in improving in this topic, and we've had quite a lot of discussions about math readiness here in California and nationally. We wanted to respond to the growing interest by creating some conversations that were not limited by room size and travel expenses, as well as have the opportunity to engage some experts from across the country. So thank you for joining us today. I want to point out that if you have questions at any point, there's a chat function on the GoToWebinar control panel. You may send your questions into us. If the question is for a particular person, please indicate who the question is for, and we're hoping to get to as many of the questions as we can during our hour plus together. The hosts of our webinar today are the Opportunity Institute and LearningWorks. Opportunity Institute is a Berkeley-based nonprofit organization that promotes social mobility and equity by improving educational opportunity and outcomes. And LearningWorks is an Oakland-based partnership that aims to strengthen student achievement in community colleges. And also together with PACE, LearningWorks was the publisher of my 2015 series of reports. I also want to acknowledge two funders that help support the series of webinars, the Irvine Foundation and the College Futures Foundation, both here based here in California. Why are we here today to talk about rethinking post-secondary mathematics? Several reasons. First of all, there's been growing concern about the high rates of remediation in mathematics, especially at broad access public institutions, two-year and four-year higher institutions of higher ed, and concern that these high rates of remediation may present a barrier to college completion, which is certainly not the reason for having remediation. The purpose of remedial courses is supposed to better prepare students to be successful in college. There have also been increasing concerns as we look at improving math readiness about possible misalignment between K-12 and higher education math requirements, as well as challenges around articulation and transfer of math course credits between institutions of higher education, especially two-year and four-year institutions. And together, all of these concerns also point to questions about equity and fairness, especially whether underrepresented minority students are disadvantaged by existing policies and whether new policies could be more fair and more equitable. I want to welcome our presenters today. We're fortunate to have a really great group of guests here with us. And our first speakers, we're going to hear first from a team from Ohio that led the work of their changes in their their post-secondary mathematics programs. First of all, Joan Leitzel, who's a professor emeritus of mathematics from Ohio State. She's also a former president of the University of New Hampshire, and she chaired Ohio's Mathematics Steering Committee. And we will also then hear from Luis Kazian, who chairs the math department at Ohio State now, and he also leads a network of Ohio's mathematics chairs, which are implementing the changes to post-secondary math in Ohio. Secondly, we're going to hear from two experts from Georgia. First, Malcolm Adams, who heads the math department at the University of Georgia, and he was part of Georgia's task force on the role of mathematics in college completion. followed by Herman Vargas, who's an assistant vice president of the College of Coastal Georgia, who was also a member of that task force and subsequently has been chairing the ad hoc steering committee on transforming college mathematics implementing their implementation plan. And lastly, we have Kate Stevenson from California State University, Northridge. Kate is going to lead off the Q&A session. In addition to leading the developmental math program at Cal State Northridge, Kate is co-chairing CSU's Quantitative Reasoning Task Force, which is considering some of the same questions that Ohio and Georgia tackled. And so she's going to help make sure that we have a discussion that is relevant to the questions that folks in California and other states are asking. I just want to remind you, you will have the opportunity to ask questions by using your chat function now or at any time during the webinar. And now I am pleased to turn the mic over to Joanne Leitzel of Ohio.
And I am very pleased to be with you all today and to summarize some of our progress in Ohio. I'd like to start by explaining why we decided in Ohio that this was a time to revisit, make some changes, some updates in post-secondary mathematics instruction and mathematics curricula. We started here in the summer of 2013. Then I will summarize how we structured our process in Ohio, what we accomplished in the startup period, and then Luis Kazian will give you a summary of where the work is at this time. It's still a work in progress in Ohio. And we will do this not thinking we will tell you what you should do in Ohio, but thinking that if we summarize where we are in we will not tell you what you should do in California, but we're thinking if we summarize how we've approached the issues in Ohio, perhaps it will be helpful. And then Georgia will follow us, and as you know, we'll finish with the most important part of today's webinar, your questions and your comments. Let's pause and talk about why we teach mathematics to post-secondary students. Some come to us having already said that mathematics is their area of study of choice. And when that happens, we surely appreciate their secondary teachers for bringing them this far. For others, mathematics will be part of the tools they need in disciplines they want to study that are mathematics dependent. And here we're seeing some very significant changes. No longer is it the case that we can simply say engineering and the physical sciences are the mathematics intensive fields. Of course, those are very mathematics intensive, but some of their needs in mathematics have changed recently and continue to change. And these days, there are other fields that are also definitely mathematics intensive. That's made very clear in the NRC report, The Mathematical Sciences in 2025. And I suspect you've seen that. New areas, for example, the biological sciences, areas of the social and behavioral sciences and business, the emerging field of data science, all require mathematics now. And these fields present new challenges for our undergraduate programs, and also they present new faculty on our campuses that mathematics faculty must now work with. And for all students, we teach mathematics because we know that can build those important habits of mind, logical reasoning, analytic and problem-solving skills, quantitative modeling and simulation tools. For all, we teach the appreciation of applications of mathematics, its relevance, its structure, and its beauty. And so there are a range of reasons we teach mathematics to our undergraduates, and we'll keep them all in mind. Now, I'll need to explain to you about the Ohio Board of Regents so that this slide makes sense. There are 36 two-year and four-year public higher education institutions in Ohio. Each one has its own board of trustees, but there's also a coordinating board for public higher education that was called the Ohio Board of Regents until recently. They've changed their name. And that board charged to bring the public institutions together on points of common interest and in support of the common good of higher education. And even though the regents have no statutory authority over the institutions, the governor now appoints their chancellor, and the regents work closely with the legislature, so the campuses do pay attention. And in the spring of 2013, the mathematics faculty, who were working on committees at that level, convinced the regents staff that there were some real problems in mathematics that needed attention. And here were some that they pointed out. And as Pam has said, post-secondary mathematics is seen as a barrier to entry to other fields of study and to college completion. Students in Ohio were experiencing problems in transferring their credits from one institution to another, and that becomes a serious issue as more two-year college students come to the universities for their baccalaureate degrees. And then in Ohio, we were at that time anticipating some significant changes in secondary mathematics. And that is a consequence of the new student learning standards, which in Ohio reflect closely the Common Core. And of course, changes in secondary preparation mean take a look at those entry-level courses in post-secondary. And then we should realize that we have new tools for the delivery of instruction. And that technology gives us ways to design instruction, design instructional material, many new opportunities we haven't had before. And before I go to the next slide, I'll admit that we have to expect that we'll need to be even more creative this time than usual in finding ways to do new things without compromising quality and effectiveness and without stressing our already very limited budgets. And now here was what the Board of Regents did. They formed the Ohio Math Initiative, which we call, you'll notice, OMI, the steering committee, in the summer to study the issues and make recommendations. This steering committee was comprised of six mathematics faculty from our universities, five from the two-year colleges, plus me, the neutral chair. And one thing I noticed immediately was that no two people on the committee knew each other or much about the institutions they came from. We had two external consultants who were very helpful to us, Yuri Treisman and Jenna Cullinane from the University of Texas there at the Dana Center, as you may well know. And the charge to our committee was to develop expectations and processes that result in each campus offering pathways in mathematics that yield increased success for all students in mathematics, a higher percentage of students completing the institutional degree programs, and effective transferability of credits when students move from one institution to another. And this is how we structured our work for that committee. We started by identifying five areas where change was probably needed. We grouped the areas of concern. Then we identified problems and the opportunities that we saw in each area. We identified what was driving each of these problems, and we drafted strategies for addressing those problems. And in a minute, I'll tell you what those five areas were. We held two meetings with the 36 department chairs, and Louise Kazian, who's next on our agenda here, hosted those meetings for us at Ohio State. And almost to my surprise, all 36 department chairs were present for both meetings, no deputy people sitting in. And after those meetings, we crafted the steering committee recommendations and wrote our final report by early 2014. We made four assumptions that may not jump out at you, but would be important for you to know, I believe. And it was that this work of implementation and change would need to be done on the campuses by mathematics faculty who understand what the problems are. We didn't want that kind of work being handed down from on high. In addition, we're very aware that different institutions have different missions. So the goal was never program uniformity, but rather appropriate and improved programs on each campus. The criteria for a course being at college level and yielding college credit was to be that the course builds on and extends Ohio secondary school math standards, not duplicates them, builds on them and extends them. And as a consequence, traditional intermediate algebra is not college level. That's apparent. Let me say one more thing about our recommendation I'll build it into the next slide. Here are the areas that we pointed out need work. The entry-level courses and alternative course pathways, and that's the first group. When we talked about that in our report, we pointed out the advantages that some of our schools, higher education, are finding in moving from course prerequisites to co-requisites. If you don't know about these alternative formats, you'll want to learn. In these formats, students' individual weaknesses, gaps are identified, and students are given short instructional modules, or even concurrent half semester courses to fill the gaps, but they don't take a year or two to repeat what they should have learned in high school. It's more like just in time learning. And the steering committee also advised departments as they did their work to be mindful of students' intended majors and, if possible, to anticipate those in the early courses. The second area of concern is the processes and criteria for course credit transfer. Fortunately, we had people working on committees at the state level that could move in and be helpful there. The third one is the importance of communication and outreach across the math departments in higher education and on each campus between mathematical sciences departments and their stakeholder departments. The fourth one is the importance of data collection, analysis, sharing. We can learn from performance data, and we learn even more if we share our data. And in the alignment of secondary and post-secondary content and instruction, we recommended that departments get connected with the schools that send them students and work with them to align students' preparation and the entry-level courses. The response has been very gratifying to those of us on the steering committee. The 2-year and 4-year schools have found they could work together. Luis is taking the lead, serving as the convener. They had fo initially formed 5 working groups to reflect our 5 problem
Joanne,
areas.
this is
And
Pam
I have
speaking. If
to
we can get to Luis in a moment, that would be good.
Good. And they had 5 working groups to start with, and the Board of Regents is providing their support. And finally, those of us on the steering committee felt that we had learned that we could learn from each other, we could work together, that this is one of those exceptional times of special opportunity, and that we have a responsibility to make changes now. And we were also reminded, as you know, public education is never easy. And I will remind you, the work is never done, because mathematics is a very dynamic field. Thank you.
Now we're going to hear from Luis Kazian.
Yeah, this is Luis. Okay, so I will start now. I will start by summarizing the final report of the steering committee. And some of these will repeat some of the things that were said already by Joanne. So the 5 goals, one of them was to develop high quality entry level courses and pathways. And this was really a response to a high percentage, 40% of students attending college in Ohio requiring remediation. One thing to keep in mind is that pathways and entry-level courses refers always to college-level courses. The second one was to develop transfer policies. The third one was to develop. The third one was about communication, and it recommended the formation of a network of chairs, which already Joanna talked about. One important thing to keep in mind is that forming the network of chair was more than just addressing a communication issue. In fact, it created a space for a democratic process, and that was very, very important in what followed. The fourth item is about sharing data, and the fifth item was about alignment of high school with college, and maybe there. I will go back a little bit to point number three. So when the network of chairs was formed, as I said before, it created a space for the democratic process to be used for the development of policies. It's important to note that policies carry added authority when they're the result of a democratic process whose source is basically the grassroots level of faculty in the state of Ohio working on educational issues. And this is just a quick diagram of indicating the role of the network of math chairs, which is connecting the grassroots level of the community of faculty working on many institutions in the state of Ohio on instructional issues and the official educational policy level, which is now used to be called the Board of Regents. The Ohio Board of Regents now is the Ohio Department of Higher Education. So what I want to go quickly over is what is being done as a result of all of this. And Joanne already talked about the notion of what is a credit-bearing college-level course in mathematics. So this very soon the network of chairs arrived to the consensus that any college-level course should broaden, deepen, or extend the student learning relative to the standards for graduation in the state of Ohio from high school. We already talked a little bit about pathways, so I'll just remind you once again that pathways are always math courses, math pathways are math courses which are college level. And it's important that they align with specific field of study. And what we call math gateway courses are simply the initial, the entry level courses that these pathways begin with. So three pathways have been identified by this process. Maybe I should have said before that the network of chairs, the first thing that it did is endorse the goals of the steering committee, and then formed five different subcommittees and democratically elected different groups of faculty to work on those committees. And so this is the result of some of the work from these five committees. So three pathways have been identified. One is the statistics pathway, and this is meant for students in, for example, social work. And the main thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't this pathway doesn't require college algebra or calculus. There is a second quantitative reasoning pathway, which is meant for students, for example, in communication, in fine arts. And here, what is important is that the entry level course is a quantitative reasoning course, which is about quantitative thinking and practical solving problem solving, and again doesn't require college algebra or calculus. Calculus is not part of the pathway. Then finally, there's a STEM preparation pathway that. Is designed well for STEM fields, for example, chemistry, engineering, physics, math, and this is a standard pathway that starts with college algebra as an entry level course and goes through calculus. And there is a fourth one that is in preparation, which is in the planning stages for early and middle childhood education majors. Maybe I'll just finish by saying that what I think is the most important thing in this process is that we have added flexibility as a way to help decrease the number of students that require remediation. So flexibility and better linkage between the courses that we teach in math and the intended areas of study. And I think I will stop at this point now.
Thank you so much, Joanne and Luis. I know I have some questions that I'm going to hold off on until we have our discussion. I'm now going to turn the discussion over to Malcolm Adams of the University of Georgia, and followed by Herman Vargas of the College of Coastal Georgia.
Good afternoon, everybody. There we go. Okay, just making sure I can. There we are. That's my first slide. I'd like to thank my colleagues from Ohio. That was a great presentation, and I'll try to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing in Georgia. Many of the themes I think you'll see will follow along much of what they've been doing in Ohio as well. To begin with, let me say a few words about the university system of Georgia. We have 29 institutions with over 300,000 students. The institutions range from open access, open enrollment state colleges to fairly selective research universities. So a wide variety of student populations. There are many challenges with such a wide system. Some of the universities have really great six-year graduation rates, 83% or higher, while others are challenged with graduation rates much lower. In addition to this, there's also a technical college system of Georgia. We don't have a community college system in Georgia, but the technical college system is similar to that. The system is governed by a board of regents, and the system has, it sounds to me, it has a bit more control over the institutions than the Ohio regents do. There are articulation agreements in entry-level math courses and English courses. And in fact, recently we've been developing articulation agreements with the technical college system as well. So to get started in what we're talking about here, out of Complete College Georgia, which had started a few years earlier, a number of pilot programs in remediation and new models in remediation had been established in the state in different institutions, and it was felt that it's time to bring this to scale in the entire system. And in 2013, in January, the system established a system-wide task force on the role of mathematics in college completion. The charge that they developed was to dramatically increase success rates in mathematics gateway courses without compromising the integrity of the mathematical content. It was made up of mathematics faculty from the wide spectrum of institutions that are represented. So Herman was on that committee, and so on this task force, and so was I. And we also had four specialists from the system. And we also were lucky to have Uri Treisman and Jenna Cullinane there as consultants, and can't say enough about how valuable they were to us. In July of 2013, so we worked fairly, they made us work fast, but we brought out our final report with 8 recommendations. And part of that process was, but you know, you can make recommendations as much as you want, but you have to also make sure that there's some process in terms of thinking about implementing them. And so part of our report was to design a continuation, mainly to recommend an ad hoc steering committee to direct the implementation of these recommendations. And that ad hoc steering committee was a somewhat larger group than the original task force group with a broader representation of faculty from the institutions. It also worked in conjunction with the Advisory Committee on Mathematical Subjects, which was already in place. This committee advises the system, the Board of Regents, and it has a representative from every mathematics department, so from each of the institutions. So that's sounds like Ohio is just implemented that, but this was already in place for us, and I think it's been a very valuable tool for us to have that structure. In February of 2014, the Ad Hoc Committee finalized an implementation plan, and the Advisory Committee endorsed that. And following that, as in Ohio, we had a series of regional workshops and then a system-wide symposium to get the word out to all of the departments and generate some momentum for making these changes. So I'll quickly go through six of our eight recommendations, sorry. A couple of them were a little specific to the system and probably not as interesting to you. The first recommendation is to focus on supporting success in college credit bearing gateway mathematics courses for all students. So not just STEM students, but the entire, all entry-level classes. And the point is supporting success in the college credit bearing course. To not repeat or reteach high school material unless it's really important and essential for the college course. The second recommendation, so building on that, is to align the Gateway Mathematics course sequences with academic programs of study. So this is the idea of pathways. So in particular, college algebra should not be the default class for non-STEM majors. We already had two pathways in existence in our system. So there's the STEM pathway, which starts with college algebra and then goes on to pre-calculus and calculus and so on. And then we already had a non-STEM pathway, which depending on the institution, would begin with either quantitative reasoning or an introduction to math modeling. So that's system-wide, that those two pathways have this structure. Beyond that, the pathways can be, depending on the institution, will vary what the next step after this gateway course, after the gateway course. So this non-STEM pathway is more centered on data-centered problems and logic and reasoning and communications skills. The third recommendation was to implement a co-requisite approach to support student success in gateway mathematics courses. So my colleagues in Ohio spoke of just-in-time remediation to do the remediation as they're taking the college credit course instead of spending time remediating before they even get into a college credit course. At the same time, we felt that there were students that had more significant gaps and weren't quite ready for that. And so we recommended that year-long pathways be developed where the first term was spent on foundational material and then the second term would be that gateway course blended with co-requisite help. Our fifth recommendation is about placement, to use multiple measures to place students in gateway courses and appropriate supports. So I think placement is always a very hard problem in mathematics courses, and I don't believe we have any silver bullets on this, but it's certainly an important thing for us all to be paying a lot of attention to placement at all times. And then finally, skipping to recommendation eight, let me back up a little. So having the pathways, we had those pathways in existence before this task force, the two different pathways, the STEM and non-STEM pathway. But it's, unfortunately, it's many institutions or advisors would simply direct all of their students to college algebra so that they would not be closing doors, they would say. And so this last recommendation is to really address that issue of making sure that we advise our students to go into the proper course that will help them in their intended programs of study. So we've been asking the various advisory committees in other areas to determine which is the best math pathway for them, and then working with the advisors to make sure students are directed to the right path, so that we aren't just putting them all in that college algebra course as a default course. And I think from there, I'll move on to Herman's discussion.
Hello, Herman, are you ready?
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Herman Vargas, and what I'm going to do now is I'm going to tell you a little bit about the implementation plan. How is it that all these recommendations actually ended up happening at the institutional level? So one key piece is that, as Malcolm mentioned, these all happened very quickly. And so when we started the ad hoc steering committee, the idea was to have a hard deadline of having an at-scale implementation by the fall of 2015. And I'll just tell you right away that we're actually very excited that we were able to implement all these recommendations at scale at all 29 institutions starting fall of 2015. So we're going to talk about just two of these recommendations, and then I'm going to show you some of the lessons learned and some of the data that we have been able to collect from the institution so far. And one of the recommendations that we're going to discuss is the idea of co-requisite support. What is it that we, with the implementation plan, what was the idea? And the idea was to provide all the implementation parameters for all the institutions that were going to do this. What we did is...
Herman?
Yes?
Pam, I'd just like to interrupt for one moment.
Yeah.
We had a question coming in for defining gateway mathematics courses. So could you just once again explain how you're using the term gateway mathematics courses?
Yeah, so the idea, I know that for the case of California, this will be the course that will be for transfer. So the idea is that's the course that is going to be transferable between the institutions. And so I know that, I mean, I've been in, I know what the nomenclature that you have in the system in California. So it will be the course that is for transfer. We have, in the past, we have, for example, intermediate algebra. I know that you have intermediate algebra as a prerequisite for college algebra. That course would not be giving you collegiate credit, and that would not be the course that will be the gateway. In this case, the gateway will be, in that case, the course that is going to be applicable and transferable to other institutions. Does that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Excellent.
And please continue.
All right. So what we did is then we had some institutions that were already ahead of the curve here, implementing, doing some pilots with co-requisite remediation. And the idea is that if we're going to drive these changes at scale, we need to provide the support to all the other institutions that are planning to implement this. So we wanted to have an implementation plan that was going to be very robust, that was going to provide all the support that the institutions were going to need to be able to implement them at their own institutions. So for example, I mean, some institutions that have a lot of trajectory, their processes are going to be quite ossified. So we wanted to just show all the different best practices. We implemented actually a common course numbering system throughout the entire state, which was actually very positive for data gathering. And then we were able to provide, and you're going to see in the resources that we will share, is that if you're planning to implement this at your institutions, you don't have to do any of this from scratch. There are a lot of institutions that have gone through this, so you're going to be able to find within the resources sample syllabi, sample curriculum proposal, and the idea is to help other institutions bring that change. on the switch to recommendation, the next recommendation here. Recommendation number four then was to develop year-long pathways, again, with the co-requisite support, with the year-long pathway, the creation of these support courses and the foundations courses, all of them had to be aligned to the particular pathways. So for example, in the University System of Georgia, we had College Algebra, we had Quantitative Reasoning, and Intro to Math Modeling. The creation of those co-requisite courses and the foundation courses, it was fundamental to make sure that whatever is happening on those support structures needs to be completely aligned to the material that is taught in the Gateway course. So there's no need to just simply just cram all the information from elementary algebra and intermediate algebra. The idea is to do everything with backward mapping. What's it that the programs need? If these are the particular issues, the particular content that the program needs, then we see what's going to be the Gateway course that they need, and then from the needs in the Gateway course, then we created the support classes and the foundations classes. So on this common course numbering system, we do have three different course numbers for the co-requisite support courses for each of the Gateway classes, and we also have three different courses that are going to be the foundations for each one of those. So we have in that implementation plan all the parameters very well defined, all the best practices, and again, we just mention it as best practices because we could not have this as a mandate. We know that we have this great variety of student bodies in the different institutions, so this was just created so that institutions could adapt and adopt the recommendations. Again, we provided sample syllabi, sample curriculum proposal, and even year-long curricular models from that were implemented at other states. Now, on recommendation number five, there was the use of multiple measures to place students. The idea was that we have the different pathways, we have the different levels of support, but what can we do to figure out what's going to be the right amount of support that the student is going to need? And we knew that if you were to take a single measure for placement, like the SAT, ACT, Compass, AccuPlacer, that will be giving you some predictive value, but there's a big component in the success that a student may have in mathematics, which is the grit. There is going to be, and for that, GPA is actually a much better measure, how much effort the student is going to put into the class. So we did a very large study, all propelled by the university system, that took all these students, took all their different GPAs, scores in the standardized tests, and we figured out a model. It was a logistic regression model to figure out what was going to be the better predictor of success in these Gateway courses. The final result was a math placement index that has a combination of high school GPA and a standardized test. I mean, this is something that we're using right now. It is going to be the thresholds at this point, since we're just starting, have to be somewhat empirical and somewhat arbitrary. But as we develop these new models and these new structures, we're going to be revisiting all those thresholds on this math placement index. So let me show you really quick here the success rates that we have had by area of remediation. This was prior to fall 2011, we had the prerequisite remediation. What was the success rate within 2 years? We had students that were coming with remedial work needed to be done in mathematics only, in English, or in both, and the success rates, of course, were extremely poor. We're talking about 26% for both, 16%, and these are success rates within 2 years. And we were able to change by fall 2015 when we went to scale, we were able to bring those success rates up to the 60s and 70% in a single semester. I need to disclose, however, that this is for the students that go directly into co-requisite remediation. We do have still some students that are going through this year-long pathway, and of course the success rate in that one is going to be lower than those that are mentioned here. But the general idea is that the more students that we put in co-requisite, we're seeing that they're actually succeeding in gateway courses at the same rate as those that were deemed collegiate ready. So we're saying, all right, if the student is collegiate ready, their success rate, again, is somewhere between 60 and 70%, just by providing that support that they need. Those that in the past we deemed not collegiate ready are passing at about the same rate. So that's very exciting news.
Herman, one question coming in, just to clarify, the support courses in the co-requisite model, that's an additional course that a student is taking alongside the gateway course, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Let me give you some details about that. The idea is that the gateway course, this is a 3-credit-hour course, and then this support class is an additional section that it is 1 or 2 credits that is going to meet then, for example, during the off days. So for instance, and again, this varies by implementation, but as an example, you have a college algebra that meets on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You meet 2 additional days on Tuesday, Thursday, and that's going to be the time that you're going to be spending assisting the student to succeed in the gateway course. I'm going to mention some of the in the lessons learned that the idea in that support class is not, it's not so much about content, because these students, what they need really in many occasions is just the support to learn study skills, just responsibility, good habits, and then you just give them the support that they need to be able to succeed in the gateway class. Now,
so if we could, Herman, if we could go to the lessons learned next, that would, I think we need that because of our time limitation.
Okay, I'm going to show you here some of the lessons learned here in the implementation is that when you have this, the material, you need to make sure that it's completely linked to the gateway course. So it is, again, as I was saying, it needs to be beyond content. And it is very important that you have a mixture, one great idea to make sure that you're not compromising the integrity of the subject, is to have a good mixture of students that do not need the support with the students that need the support. In that way, we're having a mixture of, let's say, 10 students or 15 students that need the support with 20 students that do not need the support, and in that way, the actual gateway course is not impacted. We're using the exact same tests, it's going at the exact same pace, it's just that you have that additional time to work with the students just in a smaller setting when you have additional time. And there will be a lot of questions, and we'll open it up for questions in a few minutes, but just to give you an idea, there will be some administrative challenges like faculty workload, scheduling and space utilization, faculty credentials, because for example, you may have faculty that can teach only the co-requisite component but not the gateway component. So it will present different challenges, financial aid, and then just being ready to do changes and reevaluate thresholds. So make sure that one last lesson learned that I'm going to share, make sure that you include faculty as we had from our colleagues in Ohio. It is very important to make sure that this is not coming from the top down, but it's created by the faculty that are going to be involved in the actual implementations. One thing is that you will have this question very often, that co-requisite is going to be very counterintuitive. How are the students going to be able to succeed in these courses if they were not successful in the past? And the idea is that what you're taking out is the compound effect of the attrition. I would recommend you to look at this regression discontinuity study by Calcano. And I mean, again, just being very careful on what you choose as your thresholds. Because if you say, all right, we give a student an additional course, just the fact that you're turning the remedial work into a year-long sequence, that may reduce their probability of success. These are the resources. I'm pretty sure that these PowerPoints are going to be shared, so you're going to be able to use that later on.
Okay, thank you so much, Malcolm and Herman. We are going to go right into questions. We have a lot of questions already. Kate Stevenson is going to kick us off with a few, and then we also have some questions coming in about remediation and co-requisites, which I'll pick up on after Kate.
Great. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions so far. I really am so grateful to my colleagues from Ohio and Georgia. You're making our job in California on the Quantitative Reasoning Task Force much easier. My first question is about equity. The purpose of a public university is to create pathways to financial stability for students, particularly those from traditionally underserved communities, or at least that's one purpose. Unfortunately, students from these communities are more likely to struggle in developmental and general education math requirements. How did you balance the competing equity concerns of access and opportunity? More specifically, how did you make your pathways more accessible without creating barriers to a student's opportunity to enter the middle class through careers in areas like teaching, law enforcement, nursing, administration, and IT? And I think we'll start with Georgia, Malcolm, and Herman on this one, if we may.
So jump in and say that the issue that we had is that these remedial students were overrepresented by minorities, by Hispanic and Black students, and it is very important that we have a structure in place that is going to work for them. I mean, our issue was not, again, content, it was a structural problem. By us fixing that structural problem, we're creating, a better pathway for access for all those students.
I think we were concentrating on all students, but by allowing them to get into and be successful in that gateway course, that certainly helps across the board.
Okay. I think in the interest of time, so that we can get a broad selection of answers, I'll move on to the next question, and I'll focus, if we could hear from Omi, Ohio. I like your OMI. I'm wondering if that was OMI. I'll ask you my question about quantitative reasoning across the curriculum. The official quantitative reasoning course that a student takes likely depends or should depend on the major. However, limiting quantitative reasoning to the major context may be too restrictive for a liberal arts education. Should there be a common baseline of quantitative reasoning skills and practices from which the major focused pathways branch out? And what would that baseline look like, if you agree? So if we could hear from Joanne and Lewis on this one.
Well, right now I think at Ohio State we don't have one single quantitative reasoning course. But the recommendations of the OMI, Ohio Math Initiative Task Force, a network of chairs and so on, was to give the framework for one single type of course. But I think there's some freedom still within that framework to make some variations.
Lewis, if I could interrupt, I really didn't mean a course. I meant that there would be a kind of commonality amongst the pathways of a common understanding of what mathematics would be common to all and then the differentiated by the different pathways.
I'm not sure exactly then what is that... you would like to know.
Kate, I think you're trying to avoid using the term prerequisite, but are you trying to understand if there's some common expectation from students entering into a college-level credit-bearing class, what their base knowledge is supposed to be? Is that the question?
Well, it could be their base knowledge, or it could be the knowledge that they learn within the pathway. We can say no, we don't think every student should know college algebra or even intermediate algebra, but are there some algebraic aspects that you would imagine presenting themselves in all the pathways?
So what I imagine will happen, and we haven't, for example, designed a quantitative reasoning course and the entire pathway at Ohio State, but the preliminary discussions are that probably what we will have is that there will be some things that we need for students to be able to continue in that course, which maybe they should have learned in high school, but we will provide them with that material as we go along, this like just-in-time remediation, right? So we'll just integrate those things into a quantitative reasoning course, but the idea will be that students will be looking at mainly at practical applications of mathematics in let's say in daily life, right? And focusing a little bit on the area that they're going to study, and they'll be interested then in learning those aspects of math they should have learned before, but they will be integrated as we go along.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I could just follow up with Joanne. I noticed that on all of the committees, they were predominantly mathematicians on these committees. I'm wondering how you balanced the fact that college mathematics and quantitative reasoning serve the whole community through general education requirements, and as such are not owned by mathematicians or statisticians.
And
what were the relative roles?
That's an important observation, because if we think we can do the job by ourselves, just those of us who are mathematicians, we're cutting out the input of the stakeholders, the users of it. And so on each campus now, there are faculty from user departments, stakeholder departments, engaged in helping to shape what mathematics is now most relevant to their majors, to students that they'd like to interest in the study of their field. And so, yes, we must open the door and invite in not just the experts, but the users of our product. And so I think your point is well made, and maybe we didn't make it too well.
Thank you, Joanne and Kate. This is Pam. I'm going to jump in because we've had a number of questions from folks who want to understand better how these reforms have been affecting the experience of students placed into remediation. And I think we've gotten into this a little bit. I understand in both Ohio and Georgia, students are all required to take Algebra 2 in high school. It's a high school graduation requirement. But what happens to students who don't do well on a placement test in their remediation, in their co-requisite support? To what extent are they being remediated in Algebra 2, for example, if they're going into a non-STEM field? I'm wondering if, Malcolm, I've talked with you about this. Could you speak to that question?
Well, actually, probably Haran knows a little more about what's really going on in our remedial courses than I do, but I would say that personally, I feel that college algebra is really mostly high school algebra, and it should, and every student should have some exposure to that at some point. But as they go on to other non-STEM areas, that college algebra becomes less important to them, and so even if they may have mastered it in high school, they've seen it and mastered it there, they may not do so well on a placement test when they come to the university, and at that point, I don't see the importance of asking them to master it once again if that's not going to be necessary for the direction they're going. Am I answering
okay.
your question a little?
Thank you. Yeah, I think that does answer the question. We had another related question. So my understanding is the co-requisite support course contains a varying amount of algebra depending on the student's pathway they're pursuing. Is that correct, Herman?
Yeah, I'll let Herman take that.
Yeah, it will be not, it is beyond saying varying amounts of algebra. It is just content that is completely linked to what the students are seeing in the Gateway course. So for example, the support class for quantitative reasoning, it would only contain algebraic components if we're doing any algebraic ideas during the quantitative reasoning course. Otherwise, there's not going to be any remedial work where just content is being rehashed. It is all going to be to make sure that the students do well in the content that they're seeing in the Gateway course.
Great.
So for instance,
the
support course for college algebra will be far more algebraically intensive than that for quantitative reasoning.
Right. And then, Luis, is that similar to how you're approaching this question in Ohio, then?
Let's see, for...
In other words, for students who are requiring remediation but are going into non-STEM fields, are they remediated through the sort of the high school algebra sequence if they did
so
not?
Right now they are. So what right now, students that need to take college algebra, then they don't have enough algebra, then they will have to take something like intermediate algebra at Ohio State, right? So what we have done is that there are students, for example, that don't need to have college algebra. They can go directly into some other. There's a course that just meets the requirements. And an example of that is the students in the School of Nursing. For example, we had a meeting with the students in the College of Nursing with the dean, and we decided that it is actually the requirements of that degree that should determine what the amount of math the students need, and then we would just provide that to them. And it wasn't then algebra course at all.
Right. So that's for a non-STEM student.
I would add that in truth we are moving.
Can we hear you, Joanne? We can't quite hear Joanne.
Oh, I'm.
Now we can hear
I'm
you.
Okay. I believe we're moving beyond the traditional assumption that if someone's going to be college educated and get a diploma, they're going to have to know a certain basic concepts in mathematics, most of them algebra. If they don't know the quadratic formula and a few things like that, we're not going to ever let them graduate. The assumption now is that students will learn the mathematics that is meaningful to their total program. And we will hope that along the way they acquire an appreciation and an interest in mathematics for its own sake. But to define a core that must be learned for a student to proceed in our programs, I think we're setting that aside.
Gotcha. Thank you for clarifying that. Two more quick questions for Georgia, probably for Herman, about the co-requisites. Who teaches the co-requisite support course, and do students have to pass that course?
That's a very good question. So it depends on the institution, but the general idea is that you want to have the same instructor that teaches the Gateway course teaching the support component. That does bring some limitations, and there will be some institutions that will struggle in this context. So some institutions, for example, use part-time faculty to host then the co-requisite component, but that means that there needs to be great communication between the person that is teaching the co-requisite component, the support class, and then the person that is teaching the Gateway course. So the recommendation will be to have the exact same person that is teaching the Gateway teaching the support class.
Right, and the student does have to pass it?
Oh, yes, and that's actually a very good question. There are different options. So, for example, if the student passes the Gateway course and does not pass the support class, the student is out of the Gateway requirement, that's like the Gen Ed requirement. So in that case, even though the student failed the support class, that failed grade will stay in their transcript, but we do not make them retake the support class. The whole point of the support class was to help them succeed in the Gateway class. So even if they totally blew that course, we do not make them retake it. Now, this is a piece that we do not publicize to the students. Otherwise, no one is going to show up for the support class. So it is very important to have that support class. Attendance is going to be key. And then what happens if the student, for example, of course, if they pass both, that's completely fine. If they fail both, of course, they have to take them both again. But then the other tricky piece is, what if they pass the support class and fail the Gateway course? In that case, we still make them take both courses. And you see, this is something that it is very dynamic, and we have been doing some changes. Because this idea, okay, you pass the support, you fail the Gateway, the fact that you fail the Gateway means you still need that support. So we're making these students retake both courses again. Now, these create challenges in terms of financial aid, because now you're having a course that you have a passing grade, and you're making the student take the course again. So one of the ways that we're overcoming that difficulty is to have both grades in both sections somewhat linked, so that you avoid these issues of having to retake a course that you already passed. So, Pam, does that answer your question?
Okay, sorry for my technical difficulty. I'm back on. We have a brief comment from Kate Stevenson. Kate, can you make that a brief one? And then we're going to be wrapping up.
I'll pass just in the interest of time. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I want to point out that we are going to post this webinar on the websites of the Opportunity Institute, as well as LearningWorks. So if you missed anything, you will still have an opportunity. There are a few questions we didn't have time for that I'd be happy to forward to the presenters to see if we can send out some answers to folks afterwards. And I also want to invite you to participate in webinar number 2 in the Quantitative Leap series, Improving the Targeting of Treatment: Emerging Research on Post-Secondary Math Placement Policies. We're going to look at some of the evidence about the limitations of traditional placement tests for measuring students' capacity in math and considering new ways of placing students that may better support students' progress to a college degree. As you can tell from our conversation today, this really goes hand in hand with the efforts to rethink post-secondary mathematics more generally. Our guest for that webinar will be Judith Scott Clayton of CCRC at Columbia University, Michelle Hadara of Education Northwest, John Hetz, Educational Result Partnership here in California, and Eric Su, who's a professor of mathematics at San Francisco State University. So please join us for webinar number 2 weeks from today, on June 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific. I want to again extend my thanks to our panelists, not just for being here on this webinar today, but for really for all the work they've done to try to make post-secondary mathematics an opportunity for more students. So thank you to our panelists, and thank you to the participants, and I hope to hear everyone together again in 2 weeks on June 8th. Thanks.